Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Leveler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
My guest this morning is the Assembly Leader, Will Barkley. He represents the 120th Assembly District in Central New York. And good morning, Assemblyman. I really appreciate you carving out some time. I know a lot's going on. We've got a lot to talk about and very busy. So I appreciate you carving out some time to speak with us this morning.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but I appreciate you allowing me to do this over the phone.
Yeah, no, this works out great. And I think, you know, in your role as a minority leader, you know, you have not just the task of being an assemblyman, but also all of those additional duties behind the scenes and whatever else. So if this is the way we can get it done, then this is the way we can get it done, because I am certain of how busy you are.
Yeah, well, it is a bit. You're right. It's a busy time of the year. Obviously, we started back up in Albany, and now we have the governor's budget proposal coming out. So there is a lot of stuff going on. So it's almost like going back to school, you know, for us in the legislature.
Oh, for sure.
And all those requirements that take our attention are now having to be looked at.
Yeah, you know, and with that in mind, you know, we just had the governor just did the State of the State address, and I want to get into some specifics, but I know you were there, I know you're part of the whole process and everything, and I just want to get your reaction to the overall, I guess, message that the governor put forward. I know she has 204 initiatives. I mean, it seems very ambitious. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, what was your sense just overall?
Well, she certainly has a different style than Governor Cuomo. You know, and Governor Cuomo, he used to do it in the convention center in the Capitol. It was really his show. It was a lot of theatrics. I would say hers was a bit lower key, but with any State of the State, it's always, you know, this is what I've accomplished. This is what, you know, the great work I'm doing, which you would expect any governor to say. And then it's always light on details, or generally more major policy, proposals out there. A couple things I was happy about with her State of the State, because it mimicked a lot of things I talked about in my opening day speech on the Assembly floor, things like public protection, things like the cost of living in New York State, and out-migration. So she did raise those issues. I'm glad she's recognizing those are serious issues that New Yorkers, no matter where you live, are in New York, are concerned about. I think where I would have, being a Republican, she'd be a Democrat, the differences are some of the solutions that she has. And frankly, some of the proposals I thought were maybe a little light on what needs to be done to try to combat those big issues.
Sure. You know, I mean, and that was definitely a standout that I noticed as well. You know, safe and affordable New York. And that's a simple sentence to say, but it's a lot of work to actually do. And I know you, your caucus, the entire assembly, the Senate as well, they're going to have their hands full this year looking at all these different initiatives. And, you know, I mean, budget's coming out any day now, so, you know, a lot going on,
right.
A lot going on. But, you know, I just wanted to talk for a second about, you know, counties, you know, programs and funding. If the members in your conference primarily represents counties outside of New York City. And so, you know, and Suffolk obviously being one of them, our workforce is here, the AME workforce is here, is very important to us. But did you hear anything in the State of the State address, or do you have any hope that the governor will include in her forthcoming budget any items that'll help address the needs of county governments?
Well, I didn't hear anything that I can recall that would directly affect, you know, maybe even negatively counties in her State of the State. You know, she did talk about housing. I know her proposals where she was really using a stick last year rather than a carrot to try to develop low affordable housing in New York. She did bring housing was a big issue she brought up, but hopefully she's not going to include the idea of requiring certain housing units in various areas that the locals don't agree with. I think we got knocked down last year. I would hope that it would happen again, that happens with the prior government, it happens sometimes with Hochul's, where they really feel like they can use, as I said, a stick instead of a carrot on a lot of issues. Obviously, my conference, you know, we do represent a lot of counties and areas outside New York City, and where I think myself and the members of the Republican Conference believe strongly in home rule and control at the local level. That's where government, I think, works most efficiently. And the farther away you get from that local control, I think the less the voice of the people is heard. And generally, it's not always great politics, whether it's coming out of D.C. or New York State or Albany. So obviously, one thing we didn't want to do, and that's been attempted, is try to take away, you know, whether it's through Medicaid or other programs that different governors have tried from time to time to put either have counties bear more of that burden, or on the flip side, take any revenue streams away from counties. So I could be missing it. Maybe you guys heard. I didn't hear that necessarily in her state of the state. I think that's probably more detailed provisioning that might come out in her budget. Let's see.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. But, you know, to your point, I think there's really something to be said about involving, you know, stakeholders as partners, right? Instead of saying, here's what we the state want you to do, and that's that, having those conversations. I can think off the top of my head a couple of big pieces of legislation that people remain upset about downstate, especially here in Suffolk County. You know, we think about bail reform and reform to the discovery law and all those changes. We wanted to see a discussion, a greater discussion with stakeholders, right? You want to come down, you know, so if you want to talk about something like initiatives on housing, you really need to talk to the folks that are running the localities and say, what works in your area? What works in your area? Because, you know, some of these initiatives would maybe work really great in a rural setting, but won't work at all in an urban setting or a suburban setting. And so there needs to be that flexibility. And none of that happens without a conversation.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I don't think anyone doesn't think we have an issue with affordable housing in New York State. And, again, it's not just in, you know, urban areas. It's not just in suburban areas. It's, I think, throughout the state. But I really do feel very strongly about including all stakeholders, and they can't have a one-size-fits-all solution to this and expect, you know, expect it to work. So, you know, maybe I was. I guess I'm sort of surprised she's going back down on housing. It is an issue, but she suffered a defeat on it last year. I would think trying to put a lot of political capital into this year, you know, it's a high risk for her. And we'll have to see, you know, really what the specifics are that she's proposing. But certainly on any issue, you ought to get the stakeholders involved. And I think from time to time, unfortunately, over the last, you know, decade or so, we've seen state government move away from that. I think that has resulted in poor public policy in the end, whether it's, you know, economic policy, whether it's, you know, public protection policy, you name it, you got to get the professionals involved. So, you know, something we continue to work on. We try to provide a voice the best we can in our conference for those local governments, you know, the law enforcement. We certainly try to speak up for law enforcement, prosecutors, DAs, everybody in that to point out where there, you know, there are shortcomings in what is being proposed in policy.
No, it makes a lot of sense. You know, and just continuing on with the housing discussion for a moment, you know, I feel like, you know, there's a question I want to ask. I don't want it to be a loaded question, but, you know, I have to wonder, and I wonder, you know, if you have input on it, you know, what boundaries there should be with the state, you know, regarding local zoning, you know, and control, you know, local control of zoning, you know, because I think that was really at the heart of, you know, last year's issue.
Well, just like schools, I think when you mess around with people's neighborhoods, they get pretty upset about it. They don't want a top-down approach telling you what you can do and what you can't do in your neighborhoods. And And by the way, it's not just with housing. We're seeing a lot of it upstate with siting of renewable energy projects, which I think everybody's, you know, no one's opposed to these things, but to try to dictate that they have to be sited somewhere and you can't, locals don't have a voice on where those are going, I think that outrages a lot of people, and rightfully so. It outraged me if, you know, someone wanted to put a housing project that I was, you know, next to my house and I've spent, you know, all my life in, and, you know, I ought to have some say in that. So to try to take away that local, say, control, I think is problematic. I think that's why you didn't see her have success in that last year.
Sure. Yeah, no, I agree. You know, and sometimes the issue is different than how it's discussed, I find, at least on the housing side of things. And people say, why would you be against housing, you know, being in a particular area or whatever else? But there's so much more that goes into it. It's not about the house. It's not about the people that are in the house. It has to do with the services. It has to do with, you know, traffic.
Right.
You know, you can put some densely, you know, packed together kind of housing in an area where the roads can't sustain, because it's not just the people getting to and from, but it's the goods and services they need. And so you just add this volume. And that's just talking about the roads. Now we've got to talk about other forms of infrastructure. So there's more to the discussion than just where should a house go. My way of looking at it.
I think completely, and that's why I think a carrot approach would work much better than a stick approach. So there's, again, most localities are great with development, you know, as long as it's done appropriately. So maybe you can incentivize municipalities or counties to do some stuff, but you know, you gotta give them the tools to be able to do it, and we shouldn't just mandate it down saying this is what you're going to do. That's not good for, you know, the local government certainly are concerned about it, but I think even more importantly, there's constituents rightfully concerned about it. So.
Sure. Yeah, so switching gears a little bit, you know, talking about cybersecurity, this is something that's been very big in Suffolk County. We had a breach. It caused all sorts of complications inside of county government. It wasn't a question of like a website going down. It was infrastructure, internal, you know, communications and ways to, you know, advance the business of the county. And so when those systems went down, it caused a lot of problems, obviously county workforce, but the constituents, you know, all of the folks in Suffolk County right. that needed to do very important things, including things like pay their taxes. So when we look at, you know, things like counties, hospitals, schools, these are primarily publicly funded institutions, and they're prime targets for cyber attack. Do you think there's something the state should do to help municipalities with cybersecurity?
Yeah, so I think the state is always maybe a step or two behind these things. I mean, these cyber attacks have gotten, as you know, so sophisticated that stuff that you thought would protect against it, you know, even 6 months ago, just can't keep up with the thing. So it definitely is going to take an investment of effort and money by the state to protect institutions from getting hacked, essentially.
Right.
I think one thing we've done maybe right on the state part, we have put a lot of requirements in to try to protect consumers from, you know, cyber hacks and, you know, the loss of their personal information. I think we have to keep focused on that and try to keep up to date to make sure they're the ones, you know, that we have to be first concerned about.
Sure.
But obviously, as you pull back out, you know, you widen your lens here a little bit. Certainly those institutions like Suffolk County that, you know, I heard a lot about that way up here in upstate, but we want to make sure those things, you know, those institutions, hospitals, you name it, just like you said, are protected. And that, I think, you know, sometimes with, you know, investing money, we're not always on the cutting edge of where that types of investments should go, because we're just, you know, again, sometimes state government can be behind a little
right.
bit. So
yeah.
To be forward thinking, I think it's worth an investment by state government to, you know, provide help to any of these entities to try to beef up whatever cybersecurity protections they can do.
Sure. And, you know, you mentioned consumer protection, and, you know, I see, just to add to that point, I see, you know, protecting counties, hospitals, schools, while it may not necessarily be consumer facing, it's constituents facing.
Right.
You know, these are taxpayers, and so, you know, it seems like they kind of go hand in hand. So while looking at initiatives that protect consumers, especially, you know, consumers at, you know, on the business level, right? You go into, you know, your local big box store and you buy some things
right.
for your house, and yeah, and
yeah,
you tighten stuff up.
Yeah.
And I think that's the concern. We wanna make sure the everyday people are always being thought of, you know, not just on the business side, but also on the government side. But shifting gears again, you know, which I think we're going to do a few times throughout the show, you know, just another big issue in Suffolk County, but across the state and actually nationally, you know, we were always very worried about, you know, we'd learn all about the opioid crisis and everything that was going on there. And some advances have been made very, you know, very well done. And work continues to need to go into that. But there is this one aspect, this fentanyl aspect, which I guess, you know, bad actors are kind of cutting that into various things. And it's hitting people, and it takes such a minute amount of this substance to put somebody into respiratory failure. And so, you know, the governor, you know, address covered the fentanyl crisis. And, you know, so do what do you think the state should be doing to support the prosecution on that?
Well, certainly good to be talking about it. I think that's a good first step. I think it's not necessarily a state, but we need to do something more on the federal level to make sure fentanyl is not being brought in, you know, across our borders. There is some concern that there's a large sourcing of that from China. You know, I'm not an expert on that, anything we can do to secure the borders to make sure the bad stuff's not coming over to poison our people, I think, a good first step. But, you know, I was pleased the governor raised it. This is one of those things that we just have to keep one. Awareness is obviously important on it. And secondly, to make sure there's certain treatment to prevent, you know, make people aware. She did, I think she proposed some additional funding for it. And I think testing, you know, which I can, the testing part to make sure that, you know, it doesn't have fentanyl in it is important, but I get a little nervous sometimes, you know, in the city they propose a lot of safe drug sites.
Right.
And I just think that's the inappropriate, wrong way, direction to go on that. So I hope she doesn't slip too far into that direction, but ultimately awareness and health treatment for it and to try to prevent the supply of fentanyl. I think those are three things we ought to be doing to combat.
Yeah, that's I think very true. Yeah. So, you know, and speaking of another aspect of crime, you know, is retail theft. And we've seen organized efforts on you know, on the island and I think across the state and in other areas. But, you know, Suffolk County, a lot of its operations is working off of sales tax and lost sales tax because of this theft. That's a problem. It's not the only problem about this, right? You know, I mean, there's a ton of different ways we can sit and discuss this issue, but just focusing on that one thing, you know, your conference advanced a bill last year to try and address the surge in organized retail theft. And then the governor advanced a smash and grab task force. You know, what are your thoughts on the difference between the proposal that your caucus put forward versus the smash and grab task force?
Well, I don't know if we need a task force. I think we can figure out what the problem is here. It's repeat offenders going out there and doing it from time to, you know, continue to do it without any consequences for their actions. So we have Mike Riley put a proposal in that would aggregate the amount of, you know, product stolen so you could charge them with higher crimes so they wouldn't be able to be released from, you know, released right back out of the street again. I think that's straight direction. I'm happy the governor recognized this is a problem. I mean, in the legislature, it's been a challenge to get my colleagues on the side of the aisle even recognize it's a problem. But it's ridiculous if you got to go in a store and they have everything locked up in the store. I mean, right. That doesn't show we got a problem. That's something that ought to be addressed here. I don't know what else does. But so, the task force, I don't know if that's going to, I'm not against the task force, sure, but I think there's legislation out there that we've introduced. I think we can probably do more legislation. I know, for instance, Mike Fitzpatrick had a bill out there in Long Island that wouldn't allow stores, which I remember you reading in the newspaper, some stores were firing employees or to counter these shoplifters and try to, you know, stop them from doing it, which that seemed even more crazy.
Right.
So, you know, crime is a problem. She mentioned in her speech that some of the crime, like serious crimes rates are going down, which we certainly welcome, but they're coming off record highs. So I don't know if it's right now we can pop the champagne and say our public safety has, issues have been solved in New York. But certainly with these other crimes like shoplifting, I mean, that has not declined. That's going through the roof. And we ought to be open to introducing and passing legislation that's going to address that.
Yeah.
You know, obviously clear problem.
Yeah. You know, and again, the way I see this issue, you know, we talk about these organized thefts. When, you know, from my perspective, it's not someone who, you know, is desperate for, you know, to bring a bite home for their kid to eat. We're talking about people who are looking to profit from this situation.
Yeah, didn't someone, I think the, I don't know if it was a police chief in the city, said that, you know, they can account for a tremendously low amount of people that actually committed these crimes, like 200 people are just doing the same crime over and over again.
Yes.
And they know what they can get away with. They're not dumb. You know, they know how to tweak the loopholes clear that we've created in the criminal justice system, so it lets them do this and get right back out on the street and do it again.
Sure. You know, so I got a couple of, you know, I got a couple of hot button items, and I know there's a lot that we can say on it. So I almost hesitate.
They're tough issues. I'm going to defer to Joe DiStefano.
Awesome. That's perfect. That is perfect. Joe DiStefano is the assemblyman over in the 3rd District out here in Suffolk County and a former AME member. So that's the perfect guy to defer to. But again, you know, we talked about a few things today, and I wanted to bring up distinctions in it, you know, when we talk about housing and you say, you know, well, we're talking about infrastructure, we're not talking about people, we're talking about, you know, and you know, and trying to clarify, you know, we have this issue, you know, in Manhattan. We've got some folks that are, you know, asylum seekers in Manhattan, and the concern down in Suffolk, Nassau, Westchester, you know, and throughout the state, you know, you hear from folks. And I guess my big question really is, you know, we have taxpayers that live here, they work here, they contribute into the system for the common good that supports all of the government services, the infrastructure, everything that we have going on. If we bring in, because of what's going on the federal level and some of the decisions that are being made in Manhattan, if we start bringing in folks to other areas across the state, the big concern in the conversations we've been having is how does that draw down? And specifically, you know, so it's AME. We represent the workforce that provides government services, county government services to all the residents. And we say, well, we only have X amount of people, and we have X amount of people we have to serve, and we have a finite amount of money to do that. If this influx comes in, you know, I don't know if I haven't heard of any significant plan on the state level to support localities if they end up in a situation like Manhattan's in.
We haven't, because I don't think the governor has a solution. She didn't bring migrants up in her state of state. I guess I'm not surprised at that. It is already a significant problem. It's going to be a bigger problem. Putting aside, you know, the politics of immigration and migrants, illegal migrants coming across the border, which I think got to be solved at the federal level.
Sure.
This is a huge budgetary issue, as you've seen Mayor Adams in New York City. So it's going to cost the city $10 to $12 billion. You can extrapolate that across the state and imagine what the cost is going to be. And by the way, you're right, municipalities are the ones that are going to bear this cost unless the state comes in, or, you know, it'd be nice if the federal government came in and did something. But, you know, first of all, I think we just have to change the mindset. The idea that somehow, you know, that they claim we're a sanctuary state, I think we got, and that's why they're coming here, because we're advertising to come here, we'll take care of you, we're a sanctuary state. My colleagues across the aisle that, you know, that initially pushed us, I think now are having second thoughts, realizing that this is more than just, you know, having be nice to people that come across the border. This is a massive, massive cost. So, you know, what can we do? One thing we can do, first of all, is make sure we know where the money is going. We've already, last year's budget, I think, had $1.5 billion in it to help with the migrant crisis. That's probably going to have to go up substantially. But we want to make sure how this money is being accounted for. And so far, it's just been the governor's discretion how she wants to spend it without reports going back to the legislature how this is being done. I think that's, you know, first and foremost, probably the first thing we can do it. And then I think we have to come up on a statewide uniform understanding of how we're dealing with these migrants, because the city wants to ship them out because they don't want to deal with the burden. Then the localities where they get shipped to can't afford it. We need a statewide type strategy of how we're dealing with this, and then we can get our arms around how much that's going to cost.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and listen, I mean, I know, like I said, going into this, I knew this is a big issue. This is, you know, on some levels polarizing, whatever else. And I wanted to focus the conversation literally on what we're talking about here, which is the affordability, so the ability for government to operate and provide services for the people that are paying for it. So
I don't even think it's a little bit. I mean, most people you ask, I bet if you pull it, you know, should people be able to come across the border, southern borders with, you know, impunity? I think most people say no. We ought to have a secure border that doesn't allow this to happen. So, I think Democrats. I think even some of the, you know, my colleagues that tend to be, you know, be far to the left and from New York City, even they're kind of waking up to the fact that this probably isn't a system that's sustainable, and we have to maybe change course as much as we can do in the state. And obviously, we have to put pressure on the federal government to, you know, stop this influx from happening.
Sure. And, you know, on the idea of migration, on the state level, we're also seeing out-migration, right? And that's the process where, you know, residents are leaving the state, going somewhere else. And I think basically everything we've talked about today and probably 100 other things that we haven't talked about today can kind of, you know, all fit in some sort of category about this out-migration. You know, tens of thousands of residents last year moving out of the area. And while some of these things that we're talking about can help with that, you know, do you have any sense on what the focus is on the state level on combating that problem so that the residents of New York stay in New York?
Right. So I mean, I think that's been one of the problems. We've let the cost of living in New York skyrocket over the last decade or so, and as a result, people can't afford to live here, and they're moving out of state. Not necessarily, you know, always the warm weather, as the governor pointed out, but they're still moving out of state to places where it's less expensive to live. So we have to get our arms around the affordability crisis in New York, and we can't continue to just do what we do. In the past, it's always been higher taxes. And obviously, you raise taxes, that's going to put bigger burdens on working families in New York State, and they can't afford to pay those taxes. So that was, I guess, one thing I was pleased about. It seemed like the governor wasn't proposing additional taxes in her budget. I thought that was, we'll see what comes out in the details, but I thought that was positive. But we can't, the other problem with losing, I mentioned this in an interview I did earlier today, it just puts so much stress on the demographics. You know, you have, you're losing your taxpayers, you're losing your tax base. And, you know, all the programs that we know are important to be able to fund in New York State, whether it's in the state level or county level, this puts additional pressure to be able to fund those things. So it's kind of like a self-perpetuating problem. The more people will leave, you know, the more expensive it is to live here, and you know, more expensive as more people leave. We lost 100,000 people just last year. So certainly the course that we've been on is the proper course, and we have to look at doing things more efficiently, I think, in the state level, in government, and not looking to think that this is a you know, endless pocketbook of money that we can just spend our way out of.
And, you know, I found it interesting when you look at the types of people that are leaving. It's not just, you know, folks coming out of, you know, college and starting in the workforce and saying, listen, I can't afford to have somewhere to live and eat and stay in New York, so I have to go somewhere else. You've got, you know, folks that are established with their family, and saying, you know what, we could maybe do better if we just go somewhere else, and they have the means to kind of pick up and go. And so my concern, why I bring it up in that particular way, is as people start doing a little bit better, will that mentality still be there? Do they see New York as a place to thrive, or will they see things getting a little bit better as that now it's their, finally it's their opportunity to go? And that's I think the big thing we want to get our arms around and really kind of protect the state. You know, New York State is a great state. It really is a great place to live, to work, to visit, all of that stuff. And we want to keep our good people here.
Yeah, so I happen to agree with it. I think certainly there is a basis for why people are leaving, because I think they're feeling the affordability crisis that we're having in New York. There's no doubt. But also, I think it is somewhat reputational, where people are like, well, you can't do anything in New York. You got to get out of here. So it's like almost changing, and that's hard. You know, having come from being upstate New York, each generation of my family in Alaska, I've seen, you know, my friends and neighbors leave, or it's, our downtowns are desolated. But some of it is a mentality that somehow we have to turn the corner and make New York wealthy, make people think that they, you know, want to be in New York, and it's not all doom and gloom. So that's probably incumbent on some of the rhetoric that all elected officials put out there. And I'm not saying that listen, it's very real. I'm not saying that that's not, out there, but I think it's a combination of a number of things that unfortunately are just making New York very difficult for people that, either move here or stay here, unfortunately.
Right, right. And, I don't think this thing is going to be fixed with a Sinatra song, or something like that. So, but, again, I appreciate
it. I mean, it'd be good to get another song going, maybe.
Right, right. That would be newsworthy, right? I want to thank you for your time. I know you're incredibly busy. Our guest this morning, the Assembly Minority Leader, Will Barkley, who represents the 120th Assembly District, just calling down, speaking with us this morning about the state of the state and how things are looking for, let's call it the 2024 session, preliminarily. So, Assembly Leader Barkley, thank you very much for the time this morning.
Well, thank you, and thank you to all your members with the great work they do. I know down to their localities in Long Island, so I appreciate one being able to speak, but really appreciate the job that all your members do.
Much appreciated. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.